on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, July 1st. Wow. July 1st, 2025 edition. The first half of the year is behind us, and we are powering ahead towards the back half of the year, which promises to be just as interesting and filled with risks and opportunities as the first half did. And so that's what this show is about. This hour is to guide you in your mission towards your own version of financial freedom. And we do this by answering your finance and investment questions, as well as bringing you data and perspective developed with over 25 years of investment experience. So we're going to talk about today's market performance in just a bit and run down some show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle our first caller question now.
Hey, Justin, Luke, this is James from Georgia. Big fan of the show. I wanted to reach out to you guys, ask about PBF Energy Incorporated, Class A, ticker symbol PBF, PBF Energy. I've had this for a while. It's just I have not done good at all with this thing. It's down. I wanted to know if I could get your analysis on this thing. Is this something I need to get out of and try to put it somewhere else, or is this something I need to hang on to, maybe buy some more? I'll listen for your answer. Appreciate the show. Have a great day. Bye.
All right. Looking at PBF Energy, and they own and operate 6 oil refineries and related facilities in New Jersey, Ohio, Delaware, and Toledo. Now, the positive about this sector is that we're not making a whole lot of new oil refineries. And so they tend to be fairly profitable, but they are also price takers in many ways. And so, you know, their earnings are all over the place, and you haven't done well because they made $23.36 in 2022, but then $11.32 in 2023, then lost a bunch of money last year, -$3.89. So let's lose another $5.28 this year. That is not a good trend. So I would certainly pass on this name. I would move on. Revenues are down, earnings are down. And in the oil refinery space, it's called the crack spread. It's the spread that these oil refineries make between buying in the oil and then selling the refined products, mainly gasoline, jet fuel, etc. And so this is not the best in a breed. You know, it's a smaller name, only about $2.5 billion market cap. There's the Valeros of the world and much better operated names than this one. So you just have to admit you made a mistake and move on. And frankly, there are much better, if you're going to invest in the energy space, there are much, much better names than this one. So I'm passing on PBF, and I would move on rather quickly. Thanks for the call. Let's take a look at the market real quick for the day. And it was a very interesting day. It was a day where for a while growth had been outperforming value, but today in a big, big way, you had a massive market reversal in the big tech names. Large cap growth down 1.82%. Small cap value up 2.2%. And I think the fact that it's a quarter end, we're into new quarter, it's not a coincidence that there are some market mechanisms that kind of got unleashed now that we're into a new quarter. We're past what's called OPEX a couple weeks ago, as well as some large positioning from JP Morgan that has kind of come off yesterday. And so the market is readjusting. And so I think this is a time when new trends are about to emerge. You had Tesla down over 5% today, Nvidia down 3, Meta down 2.5, Palantir down 4, Netflix down 3.4, Palo Alto Networks down over 3%. Apple, which had been kind of the laggard of the Mag 7, was up today, up about 1.3% on the day. And if you look elsewhere within the market, there's a lot of green. A lot of green. Industrials were strong. Utilities did fairly well. You had healthcare doing well, even the oil names, energy, Exxon over 1.3% today, Chevron up 1.6. So definitely some nice strength, really in other parts of the market. I'll call it the S&P 493, right? There's the Mag 7, there's the S&P 493. The S&P 493 crushed the Mag 7 today and could be the start of a new trend. And I expect this to be a choppier period. And the economic data continues to come in not so hot. You had the ISM Manufacturing Index that came in at 49, continued contraction there. And you saw the Prices Paid Index remain in expansionary territory, heading up to 69.7 from 69.4. So certainly an inflationary environment that we are in, a stagflationary environment, and the market really hasn't woken up to that. And so it'll be interesting to see when it does. We're heading into earnings season, and that could be a time where, you know, the companies start to prognosticate the back half of the year, and it probably won't look nearly as rosy as the first half. Gold up 1.3%, the dollar down 0.1%, Bitcoin down 2.1%, kind of correlating with those tech names. The fact that Bitcoin hasn't broken out is, to me, a tell about the sustainability of these new highs in the market. I don't think they're sustainable, and I think we're headed for probably at least a minor correction, and could turn into something broader if the earnings season does not turn out very well. Now, we're heading to a break, still to come. My focus point in four key questions to consider before allocating crypto in your portfolio. So I'm ready for your calls now on Invest Talk 888-99-CHART. No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's whole body meal shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava shakes come in five delicious flavors: chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing, and it's easy to incorporate Kachava's whole body meal shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those five indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every two scoops of Kachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Kachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Kachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with Kachava. Go to kachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's Kachava, KACHAVA.com, code INVEST for 15% off.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right, you'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at investtalkstore.com. And now Justin Klein is here and taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point on InvestTalk today is about cryptocurrencies and how four real questions that you should consider before allocating money to the crypto space in your portfolio. And you need to be informed about what are the options out there and what are the risks and rewards. That's everything, but especially in the crypto space, because most people don't really understand it. There's not a ton of history compared to a lot of other asset classes. And so there's a level of uncertainty that you have to feel comfortable with. And there are drawbacks, just like anything. So let's dig into some of these questions that need to be answered. Now, first off is, should you buy it via an index, just like the S&P 500, for example? Well, the simple answer to that is it becomes more speculative when you do that. Because Bitcoin, even Ethereum, you know, they have more institutional adoption, but there are thousands of other cryptocurrencies out there, and there are indexes and ETFs and other ways to own a basket of currencies or cryptocurrencies. The problem is that once you get past the, say, top 10, it becomes a lot more speculative, right? The Dogecoins of the world. The whole point of, at least the selling point of cryptocurrencies, is that there are applications to real world applications to these currencies, that they have certain features that make it usable in, on certain platforms and certain use cases, as opposed to just a straight up speculative hype vehicle. And there's tons of that, right? There's a lot of pump and dump schemes. There's certainly a lot of risk out there, and they can move very fast and get into that top 10 rather quickly, just simply based on, you know, an influencer's tweet or some sort of narrative that takes hold. And those things can move fast in both directions, right? That can be hot 1 minute and crash and burn the next. And so I think the simple answer to this is it's not really something you want to index, because you get a lot of bad and just a small amount of good, if that's what you if you view, you know, the Bitcoins and Ethereums of the world as good. So I would say the simple answer to that is no, I would really just own kind of those top two. Now, how to approach crypto volatility. And this is something most people do not understand, because they typically are chasing returns. They're trying to get rich quick. And that's my biggest problem with the crypto space. It's been kind of co-opted by those that are not real, don't really understand the technology, don't understand the application, don't understand the ethos of why crypto rose, you know, kind of post-financial crisis. And they're just after it for, money go burr, hodl, right? All the terms that are thrown around within the crypto space. And it's just all about how can I buy the thing that goes up, as opposed to the thing that creates more value. And, you know, in the equity markets over the long term, it's about companies that create value for the real world. Whereas in the crypto space, that unfortunately, it's kind of moved mostly away from that and just speculative vehicles. And that creates a lot of volatility. And the issue with the volatility is that it's correlation, right? Correlation has started to become closer to what you saw today, right? The NASDAQ stocks, the Mag 7 had a rough day. And it's no coincidence that so did Bitcoin. Okay, and a lot of cryptocurrencies. So how correlated it is to other assets means that, are you really getting diversification? That's a huge question that you have to ask yourself. That's really question number three, is about that correlation. And on the volatility side, there's a lot of similarities to gold. Gold's always been very volatile. Now, not quite as volatile as crypto's been over the past decade or so. But it also has had more institutional adoption over the last 50, 75 years. And, you know, those that believe in the crypto space, especially Bitcoin, they believe that this is going to dampen volatility over time, just as it did with gold, right? The more kind of strong hands that own a particular asset that aren't going to be shaken out by volatility, the more the volatility is dampened, right? If it's all a bunch of retail investors, those just trying to make it, trying to chase the returns, as soon as those returns start to turn negative, they're going to jump ship rather quickly. Those are the weak hands. And so it's still very volatile. It's less volatile than it has been in the past, but there is some argument there that volatility will slow down over the long term. And I would probably agree with that, as long as institutional adoption remains the same. And then lastly is, how much should you hold in your portfolio? And it's really about, the numbers say anywhere from 1-5% of your portfolio is really all you need to really make it meaningful in your portfolio without jeopardizing your overall principal. The kind of sweet spot is in the 2-3% range, and that's what, if you are apt to get exposure to this space, I think that's what most people who have an aggressive stance and are willing to take risks, that's what should be allocated in their portfolio. And I would stick with the top couple names, Bitcoin and Ethereum. Now we're heading into a break. I'm ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Longer days, warmer nights, and you deserve a mattress that keeps up. Avocado Green Mattress uses organic materials that naturally help you sleep cooler, so you can wake up refreshed. It's true. All Avocado mattresses are crafted with certified organic latex, wool, and cotton. Breathable materials that are free from harmful chemicals and allow you to sleep cooler. Avocado mattresses are designed to provide exceptional comfort and support, with options ranging from gentle firm to plush, meeting diverse sleep needs and preferences. You can even try before you buy. Visit one of their retail stores or premier retail partners to experience the Avocado Green Mattress comfort in person. To make your purchase more accessible, there are easy financing options with Affirm. So, for better sleep, through breathable, naturally temperature-regulating materials, which can improve overall well-being, head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and check out their mattress and bedding sale. Avocado, dream of better.
The calls are free, the unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. This is Nick from East Texas. I wanted to call about a company, Crescendo. The ticker is CXDO. So the main reason I like this company is the software side of their business. Their platform, NetSapiens, the revenue the past several quarters has been growing at over a 30% rate. The main reason I see this is happening is because Microsoft, their product, Metaswitch, they have discontinued service on that product, and they have sold that company off to Alianza. And so the small company, Crescendo, is showing that they can compete with this large company that left the market, and they're taking their customers. So I see this as a huge growth for Crescendo. Another couple of reasons I like this stock, they've just been inducted into the Russell 2000, so that'll increase visibility and create this forced buying from these institutions. And also, they have a great balance sheet. So anyway, I would love to hear your thoughts about this company. Thank you for all you guys do. Looking forward to hearing y'all on the podcast. Bye-bye.
This is an interesting one. Looking at CXDO, Crescendo is the name of the company. Very small, $185 million market cap. Not billion, million. So, you know, doing about $16 million per quarter. Very, very small name, only $6.36 at the latest close. And earnings this year are supposed to be up 10% to 29 cents, then another 12% to 32 cents next year. I like your thesis, you know, taking market share. I'm not familiar with that, but it sounds like you are. You've done your research, and I love that you've done that. And you're correct. The balance sheet does look very, very strong. They have net cash on their balance sheet, okay, of about $30 million. So market cap's 185, but the enterprise value is only $155 million, okay? And now the free cash flow is not amazing, about $7.5 million. So not a huge free cash flow yield, but headed higher. So I like that. And profitability is improving rapidly. And see, what are they doing with that cash? They're not buying back shares. I'd like to see them buy back shares with some of that cash flow. But overall, I like the trends here. Revenues last quarter were up 12%. Earnings were up 33%. The technicals are fine. Relative strength is 93. So I have no issues on that front. Small name, certainly higher risk, but I like it. I'm going to give CXDO a thumbs up. Thanks for the call. I usually don't give those smaller, tiny names, microcap names, thumbs up like that. But hey, this was seems like a good one. Now let's drop in another InvestTalk YouTube channel question. Derek Johnson says, I had a question about Target, TGT. Do you believe that the worst is over as far as earnings deceleration? Would it be possible the stock has bottomed like Dollar General? Finally, is the stock investable at the current price, or do you see further deteriorating of the stock price? Well, you're right. The stock is down pretty considerably. It did have a nice day today, so you definitely like that. Let me pull this up here in a weekly chart. Yeah, I mean, it's on a downtrend. Let me pull up. I have to zoom out to a monthly. And this is actually pretty good support here. Frankly, I would like it more in the mid 80s versus now it's right around 103. But I think that's a pretty good risk versus reward, because I think it can head much, much higher based on the current valuation. So if you look at earnings expectations for next year, $8.02 is a $103 stock. So talking about low teens, 4.4% dividend yields, $47 billion market cap. I'm starting to like Target at these levels. So I think there's definitely more upside. Now, the biggest worry here is the economy. The labor market is breaking to a degree. We know that younger workers are not finding jobs like they used to, and they're struggling. So those kind of in the Gen Z, young millennials, et cetera, they're challenged. And certainly that's going to impact consumer spending over the medium term. And, you know, earnings estimates for Target continue to come down. And that's probably my biggest worry. And I would say, okay, maybe it's not going to bottom right this second. But I'm looking at this from a longer term perspective, kind of, is this a name that will continue its strong cash flow and the fact that it has a good balance sheet? I really like that. Let me pull that up here. Yeah, only about $10 billion in net debt and a $47 billion market cap. Free cash flow still at $3.5 billion. So I'm going to give this one over the long term a thumbs up. Now, caveat, it may not necessarily be bottomed here. Could certainly make its way back into the 85 level. That would be a very strong buy. I give it a modest thumbs up here, but I do worry about those trends in earnings, which remain a bit under pressure. So it kind of depends on your time frame. Short-term trade, probably not, but long-term hold, I think these are good levels over the long term. Thanks for the call. Now, let's touch a bit on the labor market. And I think this is certainly underappreciated. A lot of people focus on tariffs and the impact that tariffs will have on inflation, on goods demand, goods supply, etc. But what's underappreciated is actually a different Trump policy, and that is in regards to immigration. Now, this is not a stance on whether or not it's a good policy or a bad policy. That's not what the show is about. The show is about what is the underlying impact of these policies to the broader economy. Now, there are three pillars to the Trump stance on immigration, right? His agenda. Number one is shutting down border crossings, especially U.S.-Mexico border crossings. And we know that has trailed off considerably. The second is actually using ICE to deport a lot of illegal immigrants and those that, you know, don't have their proper papers to be here. And the final is to end things like refugee programs, reduce student visas, institute country bans, travel bans, and raising barriers to actually acquire visas. And all three of these are in effect right now. Migrant encounters at the Mexican border have fallen to the lowest levels not seen since 1960s, okay? And ICE is on average deporting about 2,000, or not deporting, but arresting 2,000 people a day. Now, not all those are deported. Some of those obviously are people that have grounds to stay here. But that compares to just over 300 arrests per day in the fiscal year 2024 under the Biden administration. So it's up about 6.5-7 times what it was pre-Trump administration. And then if you look at the bans on or restrictions on student visas, for example, In March, three quarters of postgraduate researchers and PhD students who answered a poll for Nature magazine, so these are typically those that are in the medical field, said that they were considering leaving the United States. So in a big way, this is brain drain, right? Those people are training here, and three quarters, 75%, are unlikely to stay in the United States once they graduate. And then on top of that, you have tourists. Tourist numbers are dropping considerably as well. And this all has an impact on labor, right? Labor supply. And labor supply has been challenged really since COVID. And a lot of this has to do with just excess retirements, right? Above average, because the boomers are retiring. Now, part of that is just an acceleration of those in that cohort that are reaching retirement age. But others is the fact that they have higher asset values, right? They own a lot of real estate, they own stocks, and their ability to retire has improved as asset prices have inflated. And then you add on top of that, you know, the uncertainty around COVID and health issues that has accelerated those leaving the workforce. And another reason why our debt situation continues to get worse is because a lot of those off balance sheet liabilities, meaning Medicare or Medicaid, are now coming on balance sheet, right? Those boomers that are no longer working, paying into Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, now they're collecting. And so that's a big shift there. And so this is going to exacerbate the supply constrained nature of our economy when it comes to labor. And strong labor supply really had been driving GDP higher because we are not having enough kids in this country. We've been well below the replacement rate when it comes to new births for many years now. Now, Evercore ISI expects net immigration to stay negative beyond this year and expects foreign-born population could drop by around 500,000 per year over the next 3 years. So you're talking about 1.5 million people coming out of the labor force. Now that's nearly 1% of the labor force. We have about 200 million people working in this country. And so 1.5 million is approaching that 1% level. And so this is ultimately going to lower the overall growth potential of the economy. Morgan Stanley expects the growth potential of the economy to drop from about 2% to about 1.5% next year due to these policies. And once again, this isn't opining on whether it's good or bad for the country. It's whether it's good or bad for labor supply and economic growth. Now, in total, there's about 8.3 million unauthorized workers in the United States. Okay. That's roughly about a little less than 5% of the total U.S. workforce. And after taxes, this group has over $250 billion in annual spending power. So it's not just about the cost of labor for businesses and their profitability, but you know, those people are earning money, they're earning a paycheck, and they're spending here in the United States for the most part. And so this is something that you have to account for and is underappreciated in what's happening in the labor market or in the economy as a whole. And so this is soon going to show up in a lot of the economic statistics. And that's why another kind of nail in the coffin of what is likely to be a recessionary environment over the next 12 months. And this is part of those dynamics. Let's play another caller question right now.
Thank you guys so much for everything you do. I've been listening for a couple of years now, but this is the first time I've ever called in. And I was looking for the right question, but I think I'm going to start with one regarding reverse split. So let's say you own 100 shares of a company, and that company does a 1 to 10 reverse split. What would that mean for the shareholder of that asset? Thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to listening to your feedback on this question. Thank you.
All right. I love this question because a lot of people don't understand stock splits, or in this case, reverse splits. So a normal stock split is that there's some sort of 10-for-1 traditional stock split. And say you had 100 shares. Now you have 1,000 shares and the stock goes down. You'd move one decimal place, right? So maybe it's a $300 stock and you own 100 shares. A 10-for-1 split would mean that it's now a $30 stock and you own 1,000 shares. Frankly, it's the same dollar amount in value. Reverse split is the opposite, where let's say a lot of times it's a very low price stock. Maybe it's $3. A lot of times they do reverse splits to avoid delisting when you're below $5, considered a penny stock. And a lot of brokerage or a lot of exchanges don't like that. And they'll delist you if your price is too low. So let's say it's a $3 stock and you own 100 shares. Reverse split would mean it'd go to $30 and now you own only 10 shares. Okay, that's the reverse split. It's the opposite. Now, when you see a company or an ETF do a reverse split, typically that's a bad sign. Typically, it's to make the company stock look better, right? Because it looks better when it's trading for $30 versus $3, even if the valuation doesn't change. Remember that. Whenever there's a stock split or reverse split, it does not change the valuation. But the motivation to do each usually is the exact opposite. So when you have a stock at a high price, a lot of people may not want to buy it at that price. They might feel expensive. And so they'll do a stock split to make it look cheaper, when in reality, it's not any cheaper. It's the same value, same market cap before or after the split. So it's trying to make it more attractive to investors. On a reverse split, in some ways that's the same, but it's more about, once again, the exchange. And to make it look like the company is more substantial than it is. And so it really does it matter, but it is a bad sign. So I wouldn't be buying companies or ETFs that have a reverse split, because it's probably very, very low in price for good reason. And those reasons don't change when there's simply a reverse split. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein, and we have one goal here each and every weekday, and it's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART. And don't forget to cruise over to the new InvestTalk store. It's open now at investtalkstore.com.
'25 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
How you doing? This is Brett from New Jersey. I'm calling about BSR Real Estate Trust, ticker BSRTF. Looks like it's a very small company, but it looks like it is at a very fair value. I just wanted to get your guys' opinion on it before I pull the trigger or decide not to. Thanks again for all you do. Bye-bye.
All right. Looking at BSR Real Estate Investment Trust, as you'd imagine, it is a REIT. And this is an interesting one. It's a multifamily REIT and operates mainly in kind of high growth areas such as Arkansas, Texas, and Oklahoma. It has about a 4% yield, which is okay. What worries me is the cash flow is not amazing. It does have a good amount of debt on its balance sheet. And that long-term debt has been on a long uptrend. It's recently come down a little bit. So that's a bit of a positive. But overall, those debt levels are a bit concerning in my mind. And its payout ratio is negative. It's okay. It's very high risk, and it's because it's so small. Frankly, I don't have enough information because it's so small. Let me look at the chart real quick. If a chart will open, sometimes these charts don't open for me, especially for these small, very small names. Yeah, I don't have a chart on it either. So I don't really have enough information. I wish I did. It's somewhat interesting, but I don't like these super small REITs. I don't know how liquid it is as well. Let me look at the average daily volume, 16,000 shares on a $13 stock. Might be hard to buy, to be frank. So, you know, as a small part of your portfolio, I'm okay with it, but I don't love how small it is and how liquid it is. Okay. Let's go with another InvestTalk YouTube question that came in via a comment section. And Gil Tel Aviv says, Palo Alto Networks is a very solid business, been growing constantly in revenue year over year. I wonder if it's a good point to pick it up. All right, looking at PANW. And what did this do today? I would imagine this was down pretty considerably, and it was. Okay, and this is one of those names that has always traded at quite a hefty multiple, 65 times earnings right now. Supposed to earn $3.27 this year, $3.68 next year, but it's a $197 stock. And revenue growth is solid. It's kind of been in the mid-teens for the past 6 quarters or so. Earnings growth this year, same thing, kind of in the mid-teens. But are you going to pay 60 times earnings for the mid-teens growth? Probably not. And this is a security name, so security tends to be pretty hot and in a competitive space, but also a space that companies make very high profits. You know, they're high-quality businesses, very sticky businesses. So I like the business. I just hate the valuation. You're talking about $3 billion in free cash flow on an enterprise value of $133 billion. So you're talking about a 2.5% free cash flow yield. That's very low. Return equity solid at 21%, but not amazing. Free cash flow has frankly leveled out here around $3 billion. And profitability has moved from 100% return on equity down to 21%. So I just don't, I would not pay this multiple. Price of sales at 15 times, too expensive. And you're starting to see a rollover in a lot of these more expensive tech names. So looks like a triple top to me. Pretty bad day today. I would not be buying this name at these levels. Let me give you maybe a level where it would be interesting to me. Honestly, it's going to be a lot lower than here. Let's just say that. Let me pull this over to another screen first. $120. It's at $197 now. At $120, it would start to get interesting. But until then, I'm passing on Palo Alto Networks. Well, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another InvestTalk program. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your asset allocation, your long-term goals, retirements, Roth conversions, whether you need to set up a trust and will, whether you need to need Social Security strategy. When should you take it? How? Why? Whether you need more exposure to foreign stocks or more income generation. Whatever that is, I encourage you to head over to our website, investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button and schedule a no-cost portfolio review with myself or Luke. And we thank you for listening to today's podcast and radio show. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.